Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go, here we go, here we go, here we go. This is it.
This is Top Flight Tune Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Nifty Delaney. So what?
Welcome along. It's the second part of our look at the chart of 28th of June 1984. The idea was when we started these episodes of Tune Machine that each chart would be taken care of in a single episode, but that hasn't happened.
Not with this chart.
Three charts in. So, here we are, part two. We didn't really cover very much of the chart. We covered Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood last time out. And I mentioned that we should have a look at the video of it as well. Did you get a chance to look at the video?
No.
I'll quickly go through it. There's two videos. There was one that was a TV-friendly one, which was basically the group just playing the song and some lasers. The one you'll have seen more often on TV. There was another one that they made before the single was released, kind of late 83. And it's a gear hedonistic orgy.
Yeah, sorry, mate. Anna, do you need to come in and get something?
Yeah,
I'm recording, but...
Oh, no, don't worry, it's fine.
Okay, sorry, mate.
And it's a gay hedonistic orgy, I would say.
Right.
It's fucking brilliant. Holly arrives on a kind of a cart that's being pulled by a man, and he's beckoned into this club by Paul Rutherford, who was, of course, the backing singer and dancer of Frightened Goes to Hollywood. There's a massive...
He was my favourite one.
A massive fat emperor figure who's kind of on the balcony overseeing what's going on, and he's having his face shaved, so his face is covered in shaving cream.
Yeah.
All kinds of things are going on in this club. There's people in various leather goods. I think someone gets locked in a fridge on stage very briefly.
Oh, no. Well, they obviously hadn't seen the public information videos discussing recently.
Unless they'd seen it and ignored the warnings and were getting some kind of illicit thrill.
I mean, listen,
they're locked in the fridge.
Gay discos in the 80s were pretty lawless places, so if anyone was going to just jump inside a fucking fridge freezer and shut the door without any fucking thought of health and safety regulations, then it was going to be one of them.
It probably was. For some reason, Holly gets a drink thrown in his face. There's a scuffle. Holly then gets... I'm just flicking through it as I'm watching to remind myself there's a bit of a scuffle. Holly is dragged onto the stage to the delight of the big fat emperor figure who's watching over it all. And then a tiger is released onto the stage and Holly Johnson is grappling with a tiger cub.
Wow.
On the stage of this club.
I don't know who I'd back in that fight. I mean, I've always thought that Holly Johnson is probably fucking hard as nails.
It's fucking great. And then after that, Holly gets tied to some kind of rotating circular table thing to the delight of the emperor. And then there's what looks like, it's designed to look like piss coming down from the balcony, but it's a clearer liquid. Who knows what it is? And then various people are in cages. And towards the end, we see Holly riding around on Paul Rutherford's back. Holly has taken off his tie that he was wearing. He's wrapped it around Paul Rutherford's neck and he's using it to sort of guide him along as he rides him around the club. And that video never appeared on Top of the Pops. and you can kind of see why. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it might have upset Tony Blackburn, mightn't
it? I'll say this. It looks like a lot of fun. It looks like a fun night out.
Well, of course it was. If anyone knew how to have fun, it was the lads from Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Yeah, especially the gear ones.
Yeah, and people would say, we were still at a stage in the 80s where people would literally say, do you think they might be, you know, homosexual?
Yeah, yeah. But this is what we were talking about last week, wasn't it?
Like, yeah, and people
gear was
go,
still, a subculture, almost.
It was whispered, wasn't it? I think it. You know, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, there's a rumour going round that a couple of them might be, you know, the other way.
Yeah, the other way.
Do you mean the ones in the leather biker hats wrestling with each other in the video? Different times, naive times.
Different times.
But what is one of the many great things about Frankie Goes to Hollywood is that they did not give a flying fuck.
Well,
they celebrated their own culture in all of its magnificent glory.
This is absolutely, I mean, it's kind of hard to go back and try and get into the mindset of what things were like then. But when Relax came out with that video and the content of the song and everything, it was literally fucking mind-blowing.
Yeah, I thought it was the most... it was one of those things
that... Anyway.
I didn't understand what it was, but I knew it was fucking perverse and mental.
Different,
right?
And dangerous. And
I thought, I like the look of this. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it's about, but it looks pretty crazy. You know, let's see what else these lads have got up their sleeves. Mind you, I thought that about the song Like a Virgin, which by comparison was pretty tame. But I remember seeing Madonna, who I was obsessed... In 1984, I was obsessed with Madonna, right? Yeah. Not, I would only have been nine, so it wasn't like sort of, you know, sexually obsessed, I don't think. I just thought she was brilliant, right? Mm. And when Like a Virgin came out, I think she's sort of going down some sort of canal, like Venetian canal on a gondola.
Yeah.
And she's sort of rolling about suggestively, heaving her bosom out and singing these words. Again, don't understand. I remember saying to someone, maybe my mum, Like a Virgin, what is a virgin? And I'm saying, it's someone who's never had sex. And I was like, oh my God, why is she even talking about
what
that
sex?
Shit in her song? Unbelievable. I remember specifically thinking, this, I don't know what this woman is on about, but I think it's something super rude.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, Relax was back up two places to number three in this week's chart. It was its 34th week on the chart, and it was going back up towards the top. And obviously, Two Tribes was number one. We'll get onto that later. But talking about the state of pop in that year, I mean, number two was I Won't Let the Sun Go Down on Me by Nick Kershaw, which was a decent enough song, but quite inoffensive, slightly pretentious as they were, you know, pop stars back then.
I think if you look at this top 10, it's as about as strong a top 10 as has ever existed. But I think the one track that lets it down is Nick Kershaw at number two. That's not a song. I'm pretty open-minded, but that's not a song I can really get behind.
No.
I don't hate it.
No.
But it's hard to really like it.
It wasn't
but
the best single
say,
off that album. I mean, Wouldn't It Be Good was a good song.
Wouldn't it? Yeah, that's decent.
But I Won't Let the Sun Go Down on Me was a
Do you want to talk about the lyrics to his other song, The Riddle?
Well, not really, because it wasn't in the chart this week, Sam. And we've got
But they've been discussed a lot
to.
Anyway, haven't they?
We'll see if the random pop blob throws that up for us at some point in the future. We're dictated to by that, you know, we can't make the decisions. But well, the Michael Jackson song at number seven, Farewell My Summer Love, which was...
That was a reissue, right?
Well, it wasn't. It had been discovered. It had been hidden away in the archives, and it had just been discovered,
It's not his best work,
it's
is
crap.
It?
It's crap.
It's very schmaltzy.
There's a reason why it wasn't released the first time round.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
But then, you know... Small Town Boy by Bronski Beat is a wonderful song and a brilliant video, which I think we talked about last time, which again I had that because I had my Smash Hits of the 80s VHS cassette, which was released in like 1987, so it was, you know, they hadn't even waited for the decade to end. But I think they probably thought, well, they were right in thinking that the 80s effectively ended in 87 anyway.
Yeah.
Because decades do that, don't they?
I mean,
and that was one. There was about 20 videos on this, and one of them was Small Town Boy. I remember finding that again, one of these sorts of things where you're not quite sure what's going on, but you find it a little bit scary.
Yeah.
because Jimmy Somerville's at a public baths and he's eyeing up some geezer
who looks
a bit like Pierce Brosnan in the swimming pool.
He's
giving him the eye, and the bloke appears to be giving him the eye back. And then afterwards, they're in the pub, because that's what you do after a swim.
Got the pub.
Go down, everyone just gathers in the pub.
Drink it off.
Swim, pub. Right? Go for me, pulse, swim.
I go swimming so I can lose the calories, and then I put them back on again in the pub. The gay pub.
Get credits in the bank, don't I? And I go up the gay pub, and I sing 8 to 9 pints of shandy.
And I still look good for all the other gays.
Even amongst the gay lads who really know how to look after themselves. But then, yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
So he's in the pub afterwards, the fella that Somerville's been eyeing up, and he appears to have been giving Somerville the eye back. So Somerville goes over to him and goes, "Oh, all right, couldn't help." I don't know what he says, but he seems to be saying, "Couldn't help but notice you swimming earlier."
Yeah, nice bit of swimming there.
Nice bit of swimming. And the geezer looks at him a bit like, "What? What are you on about?" And then him and his mates follow Jimmy Somerville and beat him up. And that was the thing. I mean, it might still be a thing. I might be being naive. But the term gay bashing was a well-worn term in the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Come a long way since then. I mean, I'm sure it still happens.
Well, it might still happen, but it certainly doesn't seem a prevalent thing. Like, you know, people would go to well-known gay meeting areas and chase them and beat them up. Imagine that.
Yeah.
What kind of a hellscape was Thatcher's Britain?
Dystopian future.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's an incredibly geared top five. Wham, number five.
Yeah.
George Michael
Gibbs. Well, we talked about it last week. I said, look at this top ten. There's three songs about homosexuality. And, you know, in the case of one, it's pretty graphic explanation.
Sam, I won't let my son go down on me. He's not a gay song.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry, I think I misunderstood that. Small Town Boy, to a large degree about gay bashing. Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. Who knows what George Michael was on about there?
What he was singing in.
It's gobbledygook, right? To my ears, at least. I mean, I love it, but I don't know what George was actually trying to say. The Pointer Sisters, unfortunately, one of the Pointer Sisters passed away last week, I think.
She did, yes.
I think the Pointer Sisters are one of the best bands of all time. During this era, I mean, obviously they've been releasing great stuff in the 70s, but in the 80s, Jump is a fantastic song. Automatic, which came out around the same time, is one of my all-time favourite songs.
Automatic is a fucking banger, isn't it?
I think that's lower down in this chart. But if you go deep into this chart, it's like in the 80s or something.
It dropped out of the 40, hadn't it? Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, number 48, down from 32.
I think it's got my favourite ever introduction to a song as well.
Right.
It's hard to explain. It's just like one of these introductions where they don't feel the need, just because it's going to be a hit single, to like jump straight into it. They do a very slow build-up with the drum beat comes in, and then the synth, and then the guitar. They're a fucking extraordinary band.
Yeah, it's got that sort of chic-like choppy guitar thing at the beginning, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, yeah.
It's
an amazing song. And there's, you know, there's a 12-inch version, it's even better. But Jump For My Love, later covered by Girls Aloud, really well, actually.
It was indeed, yeah.
And the video is really good because it's Girls Aloud are running riot around number 10 Downing Street. I don't know if you remember.
I can't remember.
Bloody great. Because it was from the soundtrack for Love Actually, the silly and annoying Richard Curtis film. But the best thing about that film was the fact that Girls Aloud contributed to the soundtrack. Mm. And they did a version of this. And in it, they're all still quite young. And they've just like somehow Girls Aloud have somehow gained access to 10 Downing Street and are just like running around like being dickheads, well, jumping on the beds and smashing things.
Tony Blair will let them in. Like that time he let Noel Gallagher and Alan McGee in. He's probably
he loved having a pop star around.
Trying to revive things by letting the pop stars in again. And that's what
but
happened.
But in this video, it's Hugh Grant playing the Prime Minister, and he actually appears in it with
I've
Girls
I've never
Aloud.
Seen that. That's one of the many films I've never seen that are really
well,
popular.
Don't bother.
Because, yeah, because I assumed it would
be dog
shit.
I'd be worried for your blood pressure if you watched it, because right. Like, it's exactly the sort of thing that will trigger you in a bad way.
Okay.
So I wouldn't bother. You can just watch the video to Jump by Spice Girls. It's great. It's the song is not quite... It's a very good cover, but it's not as good as this original. We said about Farewell My Summer Love, that was shit, but then at number 8, Breaking There's No Stopping Us Now, which is from the soundtrack to Breakdance, I think,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, Ollie and Jerry, up from 35 to number 8.
It's a brilliant song.
I loved it when a song would do that, something would just rattle up the charts like that,
mate. In 1984, were you much into breakdancing then?
I was into the music, but I couldn't really do the dancing very much. We had Lino on the kitchen floor, so that was as close as I got.
I was so into it, though. Like, I couldn't really do it. I tried. Do you know what he said? I just go, I'm more of a body popper, right?
Yeah.
Which was basically a way of saying, I'm too scared to, like, jump on my fucking head, right? But I'd be like, no, I'm more focused on the body popping side of things, because you thought that looks a bit easier.
It's a lot more technical, wasn't it? Yeah.
But that film, and the second one, which everyone says is shit, but I quite liked. It was so good, and I loved everything about it. I loved the clothes. You know, it was the first time you saw everyone wearing all this sportswear, but for, like, fashion purposes. It was fucking great. The music, the clothes, the dancing. And I even used to... There was even, like, Breakdance magazine you could get up Smith's. I fucking loved it. 1984, Madonna.
I completely forgot about that. There was a magazine, wasn't there?
Yeah, Breakdance magazine,
oh,
mate.
Oh, man, yeah.
Fucking brilliant magazine. That I might go on eBay and buy some old copies.
Yeah, why not?
And the gear. Oh, yeah. And everyone in the playground doing really shit body popping and breakdancing. And every school. It's fucking amazing. And this was very much the soundtrack of it all. Brilliant song.
Shall we look at Two Tribes? Because we've covered Relax. Now, for me, Two Tribes is 10 times the song that relaxes. I fucking love Relaxed a bit, but Two Tribes was almost an event in itself because Relax had been number one for 5 weeks or whatever, and we knew that the follow-up was coming. There was lots of talk about what it was going to be. I can kind of remember in Smash Hits when it was revealed what the title of it was. Stuff like that really, really mattered. Do you know what I mean? And it was the new single will be called Two Tribes, and it is about nuclear war. Like, fucking
And you
hell.
Start speculating and chatting to your mates about it. And you start thinking, I wonder how it's going to go.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you take it and you start trying to, like, you can actually guess. I mean, how could you possibly guess what a song's going to be like? Imagine all the different variations and permutations of chord arrangements and note arrangements.
Yeah.
But you'd give it a go.
What could it
you'd
be?
You go, it's called Two Tribes about nuclear war. This is how I reckon it's going to go.
Yeah, two tribes. It sounds
fighting
a bit like Relax.
With bombs, bang! Two Tribes. Anyway, that's how I reckon it's going to go. I actually reckon it's going to sound quite a lot like Relax. That'd be your other guess.
Yeah. I mean, I remember
Two Tribes.
I remember the first time I heard it, it was on the Annie Nightingale show. It used to be on a Sunday evening. After the top 40 rundown, 7 p.m. Because she would normally play the singles that were going to be out the week after next.
Ah.
Because there was never that run-up of 2 months of, like, this single's coming out soon that there was later on. You'd only hear about it a week or two before. And she would always play the stuff that was due to be released the week after the next. And she started the show with it. And it just started with those sirens, the nuclear threat sirens. And I immediately thought straight away, fuck, this is it. Press play and record. Sat back. And that was it. Yeah, and that was it.
Clambering across the room to press play and record.
Yeah, I got
it. What cassette's in there? I don't care. I don't care what I'm taping over. Anything's worth sacrificing.
I always tape my favourites off the top 40 and then on Annie Nightingale as well afterwards to do my little compilations of
logistics.
Stuff that I couldn't afford to buy because I wanted everything. You know, I said there's 31 out of 40 singles or something in this chart that I like.
Yeah, I agree. Well, as I've said, in the top 10, I suppose, actually, I was going to say only one song I don't like. I have to say two. Because it was Michael Jackson, instinctively, I thought, good song. But actually, it's one of his worst ever songs. So, all right, I'll rub that out. But, it's all killer, hardly any filler.
We used to get guilted because they used to see home taping as killer music, and they used to sometimes have a little symbol of the cassette and the skull and crossbones on the back of records to try and put you off from taping things. But it didn't stop us. But, you know, we had that little bit of guilt that we were brought up with. That's not healthy.
Well, I didn't see fucking Elton John and Phil Collins suffering much.
Well, no, exactly. They would have just had bigger houses and bigger limousines and bigger swimming pools. But
bigger helicopters. I want a bigger helicopter.
I want a helicopter inside another helicopter. And then it can come out of its tummy and fly off on its own. Yes, like, get me that.
Like Thunderbird 4 comes out of Thunderbird 2. Yes. You've seen it. Make it like that. Build me Thunderbird 2. That's the best one, the green one. I don't like Thunderbird 5. That's just a shitty space station, right? I like Thunderbird 1 because that's a rocket. But that only goes in one direction, up. And I need to go to all places. Watford, Los Angeles, all over the world.
Yeah, back to Watford again.
Make me a Thunderbird 2 right now or I'm never working again.
I'm never going to write any more hits. Then you'll see.
I want a little yellow submarine that comes out of its guts and Bernie Taupin's going to run in that. That's going to be Bernie's one.
Jalapeño.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jalapeño.
Two tribes. I'll have gone out and bought the 7-inch and the 12-inch maybe on the day it came out. By the weekend, at least.
Well, he's in Sunderland or what?
Well, in 1984, I probably will have gone to Washington. The galleries in Washington. But I don't know where I would have bought from then. Because I don't think there was an out price there. It might have been into Sunderland. Who knows?
But I think I got most of my records from Smith's.
Yeah.
I think I trusted Smith's, you know?
You trusted what they had in stock. You trusted them as purveyors of taste. If Smith's has got it in, it must be good.
There was a couple of independent record shops in Chiswick High Road, but I found them a bit intimidating and confusing. I didn't understand the system. You know, I couldn't find the records. When you're in Smith's, they just had the charts up and you just picked it up off the shelf and walked up and said, I'll have that, and then they go out back and get it.
Yeah.
It's just a straightforward transaction. Yeah. I think they made it purposefully confusing in a lot of the independent record shops.
To try and frighten away youngsters.
I don't know what their fucking agenda was.
just air of superiority over everyone else.
Yeah, I didn't fucking like it. Smith's was the best place for me.
Yeah,
I felt that was my home. I'm very straightforward, mainstream sort of a person. And then when the hour price opened, I switched to that.
Yeah, more range, more to choose from.
More range.
But
yeah.
The Two Tribes came out on the 7-inch, and it came out on 2 12-inch singles. To start off with, I think there was a third one. There might have been a fourth one at some point. And they just kept bringing out more remixes of it across the weeks just to try and keep it at the top of the charts. And fucking well done to them. Why not? I love that sort of thing. I love that thing where you can buy into something so much that you become a collector of it. Just the song itself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like...
Just the actual song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There might have even been a cassette single, I'm not sure. But I've got all the 12-inch singles of it. I've got the 7-inch. And it was just a massive.
What's the
massive
story
event?
Behind this single? I mean, the production is just sensational,
it's
on
immense,
it, isn't it?
Isn't
it's
it?
Like It's like unique production that you haven't seen, that I've never really heard before or since. Who was responsible for it?
That was Trevor Horn again. It was Trevor Horn.
Yeah.
And it's just that thing, it was just, let's just chuck the fucking kitchen sink into this thing.
Yeah.
Let's just make this the biggest noise you can imagine.
Yeah.
And it was.
Quite cocaine-y in a way, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you listen to I Won't Let the Sun Go Down on Me next to it, and there's just no comparison, is it?
It's paper thin.
Yeah, exactly.
You wouldn't want to follow Frankie on stage, would you? It's a good job they're at number one, so they'd be on the last act on the show.
Even Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go by Wham, which to me, I've heard enough times now, I can't listen to it anymore. It's too kind of...
It's not
of,
their best single of the era, cool, is it?
It's too saccharine, and I can't listen to it again. Yeah. I prefer Freedom, which was the one afterwards.
Freedom, I think, is... possibly their best single of this era. That's the one that I actually got. There was a school disco, and it was for fourth at the primary school, and it was the fourth year's leaving disco, but they could invite one, each of them could invite one,
one
person,
one member of Wham
from from now, who's it gonna be? Pepsi, Shirley, George or Andrew? Everyone chose fucking Shirley.
Oh yeah,
right. Pepsi was nice, but DC Lee was better, wasn't she?
Oh, she was. Yeah, we've discussed this previously, yeah. On every incarnation of this podcast.
Yeah, I turned up at school with a flat top haircut, right?
Mm.
Now, in this era, most kids, nice boys at my school, would just have fucking hair. You don't have a haircut.
It just sits there and exists.
Fucking grows, and then once in a while your mum says, get a fucking haircut, come on, we're going to the barber, and he just and he says, what do you want? And your mum just says, just cut some off it.
Short back sides. Yeah.
However, one of my brothers at the time was a psychobilly. Don't know if you remember that particular youth tribe, but their bands were the Guanabats.
Mm-hmm.
And
King
I think
Kurt.
The King Kurt. Yeah. I think the Mutants were one of them as well. Anyway, he had a flat top haircut, which was almost shaved completely bald at the side.
I'll just add that whole genre largely unlistenable.
yeah, just awful, awful. I don't know. It just came and went. That tribe. How did he get involved with it? Yeah. Like, you know what? I wake up one morning and think, yeah, I think I'm going to become a psycho, Billy.
It would appear somewhere in Smash Hits. You would think, well, that's not for me, though.
But you know what? This is the funniest thing of all. This isn't my brother Cass and my brother Dom, right? So he accidentally... It's like someone who bought a Betamax tape machine, right? You back the wrong horse.
Yeah, we did that.
Now, talk about backing the wrong horse, right? He's woken up, you think he'd been a mod and a skinhead, right, already. And he's suddenly up, fuck knows why, he's decided, I'm... banking on the next big youth tribe, right?
That
will be up there with the mods, with the skins, with all these. It's the new punk rock, right? It's going to be psychobilly, right? So he gets the haircut, right? Which very severe, short on top, spiked on top, but flat, like you could use a spirit level on it, right? Shaved at size. Gets that, gets the records, gets the gear. Even had a load of graffiti on his bedroom wall of the Guanabats kind of logo and all this sort of stuff, right? Well, here's the good bit, right? He comes home one day when he's 16. He's got a fucking psychobilly tattoo, massive, on his right shoulder, right? It is a huge skull, right, in profile, screaming aggressively, right, with a flat top, right? And it's fucking something to behold. And anyway, my mum's gone mental because he's 16, you know, and he's got this fucking huge, really ugly tattoo. And she's like, why'd you get it? And he's like, I'm a psychobilly.
Mm-hmm.
I'll always be a psychobilly.
Well,
right, I am. That's why I decided that the time was right, having been committed to the psychobilly tribe for 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
The time was right to make it official and get a tattoo. My brother is now 53. Mm. He has 4 children.
Mm-hmm.
He lives in suburban Wandsworth.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And?
He drives a people carrier.
Yeah.
He still has a psychobilly tattoo daubed on his right shoulder. And when we go to the Isle of Wight every year and he takes his top off, there it is. Still a psychobilly, are you, mate? Fuck off. Oh, yeah. I heard King Kurt will reform in for a reunion tour. Have you got your tickets?
What's the latest on the psychobilly scene then? Any news?
And I tell you another really good thing you do, right? That we, when we want to anger him and wind him up, we purposefully get psychobilly muddled up with rockabilly. Right,
right.
And you go, oh yeah,
Stray
that
Cats.
Was when you were really into the Stray Cats and you had your big long jacket and all of that. And he still falls for it. Goes, it wasn't fucking rockabilly, it was psychobilly. And you go, and all you have to do to make him actually become violent and sometimes chase you is start going, I'm a rockabilly rocker. Or ask him to do the Stray Cat strut. Yeah.
Who else you do, mate? Matchbox? Darts?
Shaking Stevens?
Yeah.
Yeah, God. So that's my brother's psychobilly story. Awful. But
that's
anyway,
the
happen. Reason I talk about it, the way it relates back to Wham, is that he used to come in and bully me and go, look at the state of your barnet. Fucking bowl-edge, you look like a fucking geek, blah, 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 blah. He's come in one day, he's given me all this dialogue, and I've snapped. I've gone, all right. What? You think your fucking hair's cool? All right, take me out to the barber now and I'll get it done like you. And he goes, all right, I will. So my mum's at work. He marches me down to the Greek barber, Sam's, right, on the high street. And he goes, give him a flat top. And Sam is this old Greek guy. He knows my mum. He goes, oh, I don't know. You ask your mum about this. I'm not sure she's happy. You usually get shot back inside. Don't worry about my mum. I'll square it with her. It's all sorted. I'm paying. Get him a flat top. Well, he got me his flat top. I was 9 years old, right? And it was like, me, angelic little brother, the baby of the family, right? My mum comes home and sees me with this haircut. She's crying, right? It was like, it was mental. I looked like a nutter, right? I went into school the next day, and as I walked into assembly, a hush befell the entire room. Everyone was fucking looking at me, right? I'd never felt so embarrassed. It was so embarrassing, right? And I thought, why did I do it? And I only did it because he was winding me up so much. And he shouldn't have got it done. But anyway, so I was all embarrassed, feeling embarrassed about the whole thing. Everyone was staring and pointing and looking and laughing. But then at the next playtime, this kid who I barely ever spoke to, who was one of the hardest and coolest kids in the year above, he came over to me, right? And I thought, he's coming over to probably bully me a bit about my haircut. And he goes, can I feel that? Because it felt nice, you know, you put your hand on top of it and it's all flat and spiky.
Yeah.
And I went, yeah, all right. And he felt it and he went, yeah, nice haircut, that. My older brother's got one like that. I said, oh, really? Yeah, my older brother has too. He goes, yeah, want to come to the fourth year disco? And I went, what? Do you want to come to the fourth year disco? You can be my guest if you want. And
test.
I went, because everyone could invite one third year. But I wasn't cool enough to have any mates in the year above, so I didn't think I'd get the nod. And I went, yeah, all right, great. Mm-hmm. And he went, yeah, and by the way, everyone's allowed to bring one single with them, right? So make sure you bring something good. So I thought, pressure's on.
So?
So I went down to the record shop, I guess Smith's on the high street, and I bought Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, which must have been a terrible disappointment to the guy who'd invite me, because he'd invite me because he'd thought, this geezer looks like a right hard nut. I think he can be in my gang with his cool haircut. Maybe he's a psychobilly like me. And I turned up and go, I'm here. Did you bring your record? Yes, it's Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. Oh, you fucking little punts. I thought you was proper. I thought you was a geezer. You're fucking ridiculous. Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. Oh, it's lovely. It's a great song.
As the blows rained down upon Sam that night. But, I mean, fucking hell. Another thing about it was that Frankie Goes to Hollywood were back on the telly again. We were allowed to see and listen to them. Do you know what I mean? Because we couldn't. They were hidden away when Relax was out because it was banned everywhere. But I'm looking at the back of the 12-inch cover, and there's like, it's just full of fucking information. It's almost like an essay on the back. There's quotes. There's fucking charts about how the nuclear power of America and Russia, and it's got comparison for how many land-based missiles they've got, how many submarine-launched ballistic missiles, strategic bombers, and nuclear warheads. And a thing about where the new US missiles would be deployed. It was just this education.
Fucking hell.
There was nothing else like this. Do you know what I mean?
Everyone was shitting it about nuclear bombs. Yeah. And part of me, I just sort of think, if I had a time machine that could go back, I'd go, do you know what? Stop shitting yourselves about nuclear bombs. Yeah, they've got loads of them. So fucking what? Right?
Who's this cool dude who's come from the future?
They're probably not going to use them. But even if they do, fuck it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll just all fucking die anyway. There's
nuclear info guy from the future. Idea for a play I might write.
So, and then it's got, along with ZTAS-3, which was the 7-inch version of it, it says, this is number 3 in Zhang Tum Tum's, which of course was the record label, Zhang Tum Tum's underestimated action series. And then it says in quotes, what flies into pieces is rubbish. And it's just, it's Paul Morley nonsensical twattery. I just lapped all this stuff up.
Yeah, people like, I mean, that was a good thing about Paul Morley. He sort of monetized talking shit.
Yeah.
But fair enough. It made people open their minds.
But this is it, yeah. It made you think, well, this is what it's like being an adult. This is stuff that I'm not being exposed to with Nick Kershaw's I Won't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, or even with Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go. This is, inverted commas, serious stuff.
Yeah.
And then and the video, Two Tribes, of course, which was directed by Godley and Cream.
They were great directors, weren't they?
And was he called Chernenko? No, it wasn't Gorbachev. It was pre-Gorbachev. It was the white-haired fella. It wasn't Andropov. Yeah. It was Chernenko, I think. It was the one.
It wasn't Brezhnev.
It wasn't Brezhnev. And they were wrestling and punching each other in the face. And there was blood and dust everywhere. And the video itself didn't come out for 3 weeks after the single had been released. You know,
That's an extremely memorable video, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was because they just hadn't got around to finishing it. So it didn't come out till three. The single had been top of the charts 3 weeks. The video
it's locked on. We've got 10cc to make it. But and maybe, they haven't pulled their fucking finger out.
Maybe it was a thing whereby it was part of that thing of bringing the 12 inches out every 3 weeks. It was part of the campaign to just keep it in the public eye and keep it in the
I had the 12 inch public that, imagination. Fatty Payne bought it for me as a birthday present that year.
Yeah.
I told last week about the fact we had a disco.
Mm.
And Fatty Payne was the one who went, I'm not coming to that. I don't even like Madonna. Because there was a picture of Madonna. But I think he did come and buy me the 12-inch to Two Tribes. So I let him off the hook this once.
That was good of him. But, the video itself got previewed, I think, on the Tube, on a late night edition of the Tube. Because of the violence in it, they weren't allowed to show it. It never got shown on Top of the Pops. In the 9 weeks it was number one again, so that was banned in itself. They couldn't show it on the 5:30 till 7 p.m. edition of the Tube. They'd have a special late night one.
All this stuff in this point in 1984, they smashed out of nowhere and absolutely rocked the country to its very core.
Yeah.
But what happened to them? What happened next? Yeah.
Well, The Power of Love came out as the third single. That was...
At that Christmas, right?
It was going to be Christmas number one, but then Band-Aid knocked it off the top. Last Christmas as well, I think.
Last Christmas. Yeah, what a year for Christmas singles, eh? Those three.
But it was number one when it came out for about a week. And then Welcome to the Pleasure Dome album came out. And then they all kind of fell out with each other. And the
Is that what happened?
Yeah, they just all fell out with each other for various reasons. They recorded the second album, Liverpool, which I think is brilliant. I think the second album is probably better than the first album because there's lots of flab on the first album, but the second album is really good.
What's the second album
Liverpool.
Called? Oh, that's a good name for an album.
And they brought out Rage Hard as the comeback single. And, right. But they've
brilliant
been,
name
I think,
for a
I
single.
They'd had like sort of all sorts of fallouts, and people had lost interest by the time they came back in about autumn '86, I think it was. But fucking hell, 1984 was just all about Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Yeah,
and I even joined the.
I'm watching the video now with the sound down, and Reagan's biting the Russian fella's ear off.
And the band are there watching it, and they've got cameras and stuff, haven't they? They're filming it.
Yeah,
it's fucking great.
Yeah, brilliant.
And there was just nothing else like it at all in terms of just excitement and danger back then. And it got to number one. They were number one for, I think it was something like a third of 1984. Frightening Ghost Hollywood were top of the charts with the various singles they had out.
Wow.
So there you go. I've joined the fan club. I've never joined a fan club before or since, I don't think. And it was something like £5.75 for a year's membership.
Was it worth it?
No, I was shit. You got like a photocopied letter three times a year telling you what they were up to. I think you might have got a badge and a photograph of them, and that was it. Terrible.
But, I knew a girl who started an official fan club once. I think I told you that.
Was it the Pasadena's?
Pasadena's.
Yeah.
It's you'd be surprised that like everyone assumes that the record company does it, but she just wrote to them and said, "Have you got a fan club? I'd like to set up." And they go, "Yeah, all right."
Well, this Frankie Goes to Hollywood one had the same kind of vibe. It was sort of like, this doesn't feel... Because it was all so brilliantly orchestrated and engineered, the whole Frankie thing, the whole concept from start to finish.
Yeah, but the fan club
just felt like it was just... Someone had chatted out at the back of the whole machine. But, it came along at absolute perfect time for me. I mean, the B-side as well was the cover version of War, Edwin Starr's song, which could easily have been, you know, the main single. Fucking great. We'll leave it
there.
The
only songs we haven't covered in the top 10 so far are numbers 9 and 10.
Well, I was going to say, we'll leave it there, Sam. We'll do another episode and we'll go through the rest of the top 40 because there's plenty more in there.
Brilliant.
Never mind the top 10, there's plenty to go into. This could go on for 10 weeks.
Yeah, I don't see the need. This is when we thought up this idea of doing a different chart every week. In my mind, all the bands and the songs we're talking about, even though we agreed that with a scope would be like 20 years, all the bands and songs I hoped we'd be talking about and cultural moments actually are just contained in this one chart.
Yeah.
So who knows? This could go on for an ever, folks. But stay with us. It's only going to get better. We haven't even got onto Elton John, Lionel Richie, or Skritti Pilitti yet. Well, so hold tight.
Exactly. Also, before we go, sticking with Frankie before we leave Frankie, a mention of the 12-inch versions, which had Christopher Barry from Spitting Image playing Ronald Reagan and Patrick Allen, who did the voice on the government's Protect and Survive nuclear...
I used to know Patrick Allen.
Well,
he's the guy who also did all of the voiceovers that were like that.
Yeah.
And I got to know him later in his life because I used to do voiceovers with him.
And
he was a great man. He once was even up for the part of James Bond.
Wow. Because they weren't allowed to use the samples from Protect and Survive, so they got him in and he re-recorded them to the 12-inch version.
Yeah,
so
great man.
Everyone, go away now and go on YouTube and listen to all the 12-inch versions of Two Tribes because, you know, it's not going to make your day any worse, is it? We'll be back with more of this sometime. A couple of weeks,
Until then.
Yeah.
Till then, do what you want. Keep on, you know, rocking in the free world. I think that's how it's said.
That's a nice way to end, I think. Yeah, good.
Mm.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.